The numbers told the story. They always do.
He's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Friday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. We don't care how you take us in. We just appreciate it either way or any of those ways. It's all proudly brought to you by BetMGM. It's Gil Alexander and it's Kelly Bidlin. And why am I talking aggressively, Kelly? I don't get it.
Because it's the day before the Final Four, baby! Hoot, hoot, let's go Owls!
What is your wager on the Owls, by the way?
I don't really have anything specific.
You don't have a wager at all?
I'm just fanboy mode, man.
Oh, okay. He's your buddy Ken Lavica.
Yeah, Ken Lavica. I know a lot of people with that school. I'm rooting hard for a lot of people that cover it, that work at that school. I'll be betting them. I mean, come on, let's be serious. I'll be betting them in UConn. We'll get to that stuff later in the show. Yep. But I'm waiting on numbers. I don't think there's any reason. FAU kind of keeps moving the other way right now. So I don't think there's any reason to go bet them right now.
Again, they were 700-1. 700-1 to win it all before the season started, or in November anyway, was when we saw it at 700-1. And then 550-1 as late as February. Late February.
Yeah, their high mark over at Circa, when Aaron Oster, who works over there, used to work here at VSiN, he sent me a bunch of this stuff. Thank you, Aaron, for sending this stuff
at
Circa, tracking it all season long. The high mark, I believe, was 800-1 on FA.
Okay, so we just need to pause a moment and say again, this is, I know it's not 5,000-1, because that's what Leicester City was, but this is our Leicester City if it gets there, right? Like, what compares to this? In North American sports, what would compare to this? Nothing.
Nothing.
So they're two games away. They're still, you know, 80 minutes of basketball away from making this happen. So long way to go, but they got, a 2-point dog here to San Diego State tomorrow. Obviously, the other game is UConn against Miami. UConn has proven themselves to be the most dominant team in this tournament. We will hear about college basketball today, not once, not twice, but three times. Dr. Bob, Jim Root, Dallin Cuff. How about that trio of college hoops experts?
That's quite a lineup the day before Final Four.
It's quite a lineup. Oh, it's like the show's being produced by a producer. Kelly, you know anybody who's doing
that? Hey, Kev
handles
everything, you know.
All right. JVT on the NBA. Paul Carr will join us to talk Premier League as well. And Paul Carr actually attended the Royals opener yesterday, which is where I want to start, obviously. Major League Baseball opening day yesterday. We'll get Paul's reaction to being there and taking in a live baseball game with all of the new rules in place. And let me just say this. I think I speak on behalf of everyone. Like, have you heard anybody counter this? Have you heard one person say they didn't like the sped-up baseball game yesterday?
Not at all.
Not a one. Average length of game yesterday, 2 hours and 45 minutes. Every team in action, all 30 major league clubs. Average length, 2 hours and 45 minutes. That's 26 minutes shorter than last year's average, including a successful, regular season start for the pitch clock, among all the rule changes. Last year's opening day had 7 games played. They averaged 3 hours and 11 minutes, so 2:45 yesterday. Not one of the first 7 games yesterday went as long as last year's opening day average. The two shortest games were 2 hours and 14 minutes.
How about that?
The Rays and the Mariners.
2:14.
Watching that, I was like, why didn't we do this sooner?
I know.
We've had to watch baseball for years on end. Here's another 4-hour random game in the middle of July. Oh, so great. 10 of the 15 were under 3 hours. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you
off. No, go ahead.
I think the conversation about these rule changes and the pitch clock has always been how do we attract new viewers right to baseball? I don't think that's the way you should be looking at it. The way you should be looking at it if you're Major League Baseball is the person like me who's an average baseball fan who
yes.
That type of stuff, the length of games, it has caused me to change the channel more times than not, right? But you're telling me games going 2.5 hours? I will be much more interested in tuning into baseball.
Let me just take it to betting. So Jason Weingarten, who was on the show yesterday, by the way, and I got a few tweets from people like, oh, what was all the hate for betting no in the first innings? You see how that went? Okay, if you're going to base your whole betting strategy on one day's result, please stop with that. Jason knows what he's talking about. But Jason, who likes to bet baseball more than anybody on earth, even he used to say, you know, my model shows that I should be betting the Tigers tonight, but do I really want to sit through 4 to 5 hours to find out if this bet's going to cash? Like you're like real life considerations would come into your betting edges. Now if it's half the length, seriously, I know it shouldn't matter, but maybe it does now for him or people of his ilk, where they're like, okay, well, this bet I'm willing to sit through. But I'm not willing to sit for 4.5, 5 hours. And by the way, he wouldn't even bother watching because it was so long. Now you'll watch. I will say, Todd and I were at the Aria soaking in all of the games yesterday that were happening simultaneously. By the way, what a weird schedule where there was multiple games morning and then sort of mid-morning, and then it was only one game followed by another blitz of night games. It was a little odd there.
Yeah, and then what, today there's not a single
and
day game?
Today's like, baseball can never get anything right. We had this great opening day, so surely you're going to come back with a bunch of games all day today. No, 5 total games, none during the day. Clearly they're clearing it for the Miami Open semis so that they can have a stage. No, not that?
Clearly, yeah, clearly.
Which we do have a tennis pick coming up today. How about that? But as far as some of the other rule changes, Marcus Stroman of the Cubs becomes the first regular season pitch clock violator. It's a violation. While Red Sox third baseman Rafael Devers was the first hitter called out for a pitch clock violation yesterday. So there were those little moments. Mm-hmm. In Stroman's case, he played in the World Baseball Classic, so he's like, I just haven't gotten used to it yet, but it's definitely affecting me. So that was interesting. But I don't think there was, like, I don't think anybody was like, oh, that's awful. Maybe, I mean, the speed of the game, pristine record, not a single person. Maybe some people were annoyed by the given the balls and the strikes, but everybody's known about these rules for a while now.
I think there will be a couple incidents, I'm sure, in the first few weeks, you know what I mean, where
a game will be decided.
Yes, exactly.
The bases are juiced, a one-run game. I'm sorry, you're not in the batter's box. This game is over.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You struck out because you weren't in the batter's box.
Which did happen in preseason, right? A tie game. Mm-hmm. Some of the highlights yesterday. I mean, Shohei Ohtani yesterday for the Angels. This was the quintessential Angels outcome.
Right? I feel so bad for Angels fans.
Shohei, 26th outing since 1900 for a guy to have 10-plus strikeouts, or at least 10 strikeouts, and allow 0 runs in a season opener. And the first time of that subset where the pitcher's team has lost as the Angels lose to the Athletics late. 2-1, they lose as a -220 favorite, and everybody who's bullish on the Angels, it's one game, but goodness gracious. Sarah Langs, by the way, S-Langs on Sports, always does a great job with baseball stats. So it's at least 1901, which is as far back as they keep those stats. First of those 26 to go 10 Ks plus with no runs opening day that lost. And then Jacob deGrom, it should be known, because this was also sort of hilarious. Jacob deGrom and Aaron Nola both end up getting shelled in the Rangers game against the Phillies. But DeGrom gets bailed out by his offense. The Rangers score 11 runs, and the Rangers win this interleague game. DeGrom must have been like, I've gone to heaven. Because he's like, "What? This is allowed?
Run support?
What is this? You mean when I give up a few runs, I don't lose automatically?" DeGrom had 7 games of 11 runs or more of run support in 209 games with the Mets. First game with the Rangers, 11 runs of support, and he gets bailed out. But some of these games, and I was sort of, you know, again, this was a line game at 6.5. We talked about the games that were lined total-wise at 6.5 yesterday. I will say it, and again, caveat of it's only been one day, but when you're watching, first of all, when we're watching all of these games at once, the games were so efficient, so quick, that you almost couldn't keep up with all of baseball games like you're normally used to, right? You're like, oh my God, there's too much happening. And in fact, if guys swung at the first or second pitches of at-bats, half innings went away into the ether. Like, you're like, wait, they're coming back up again? It was awesome. Now, from a betting standpoint, that provides a couple challenges. But I do want to this is my quick reaction from day one, and it's the way too early reaction, and I don't know that I'm even right. But for some of the games that did prove to be high scoring, like the Rangers-Phillies, like the Red Sox-Orioles, and boy, are the Red Sox going to play a lot of high scoring games this year. How about Rutschman, by the way, for the Orioles yesterday? Adley Rutschman, 5-for-5 with a home run and 4 ribbies. First player since 1937 to go 5-for-5 or better with a homer on opening day. first catcher with five hits on opening day since at least 1900, according to ESPN stats and information. But that, those two games and the other high-scoring ones, but those in particular, I just felt like, and also with the Padres game, which didn't end up getting there on the in-game, but I felt like the in-game algorithm was always like a half run too short on those. Like you could tell it was just going to be a scoring fest. And based on the time of game, the situation with runners on base and the number of outs, and I would even suggest, as I did yesterday, and here's the key to much of this, the place in the batting order, I felt like the in-game totals were always a half game too low. And okay. So it was almost auto overs in some of these games. That's one day.
Right, right, yeah. But these two are the of things them got we need there. To track.
Yeah, two of them got there, one of them didn't. But I would have argued that the third should have also, based on the situation. So that's just something to keep in mind. Not all these games go crazy offensively, but I just feel like there's going to be a bunch of them daily, especially with the new rules and the pitch clock limitations on these relievers.
Yeah, I mean, I like that it's, you kind of got a level playing field, right, against you in the book with some of these new rules. We don't really know exactly how it's going to go. So if you've got a plan or a theory, like something like that, in-game overs might be good. Track it for this first week or two, right?
Not a single pre-flop bet. I was just in-game.
Yep.
Glad to have baseball back. And good on baseball for making the change to shorten these games. It's exactly what the sport needed. Good on them. We'll come back. We'll start with our college basketball cavalcade. Dr. Bob, his thoughts on the Final Four tomorrow. Right here on A Numbers Game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Numbers Game proudly brought to you by BetMGM. Skill Alexander, don't forget, the king of sports books doing its thing as always. Time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. Won't take you but a few seconds. BetMGM has all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much more. Just download the app and then stop by any MGM casino on the strip with your state-issued ID to open an account. That won't take you but a few minutes. And then you start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. A couple other notes about opening day in baseball. Our friend Paul Carr, who will be joining us later to give Premier League picks, and again, who attended the Royals game yesterday, he said, here's a sample size stat for you, a small sample size stat. 15 games yesterday, teams were 21 of 23 in stolen base attempts.
Yeah.
21 of 23, that's 91%. Paul did the math for us. The 15 opening day games last year, 6 of 11. I think it was 7 opening day games, but 6 of 11.
And there was like, what, 3 in the first two games or something yesterday? So I think that's one we can keep our eye on.
I've sort of said out loud many times, I was like, is there going to be a Ricky Henderson? Is there going to be a Vince Coleman type this year? That would be awesome.
That's an awesome part of the game. Sorry, but stealing bases in baseball is an awesome part of the sport, and I love the idea of having more of that back this year.
And the great Matt Vasgersian is kind enough to text in. He says, the last time opening day baseball games averaged 2 hours and 45 minutes was 1985. Whew. Speaking of Vince Coleman and Ricky Henderson,
whew,
38 years ago, and he said this. He said he honestly believes it's sustainable as well, and that it should add 6-plus years to his play-by-play career if the games are this much shorter. it's really true, right?
He's going to have to be on the ball quicker, though.
Getting back to what we were saying about Jason Weingarten and making bets, right? It's like this is a different animal entirely, and only to the good. So thank you to both Paul and Matt for chiming in on that as well. What a great day. And again, as we said, they followed up with just 5 games today, which is kind of lame. None during the day. Why can't we have day baseball today? Goodness. Let's talk some college hoops. Final Four. Kelly's wearing his FAU t-shirt. He's pumped. Maybe we're on the verge of American sports history in terms of betting odds for a team to get to the promised land. Again, as high as 800-1 on the FAU Owls. Let's begin there with Dr. Bob. Bob Stoll with his thoughts on the Final Four. How you doing, Bob? First of all, how are you, sir?
Doing all right. Hey, has the conference ever won every postseason tournament before?
I was thinking about that. Charlotte winning the CBI. North Texas, and by the way, let's give a shout-out to Maddie Cox from Three Man Weave. North Texas beats UAB. I guess either outcome yesterday would have been Conference USA for the NIT. And FAU trying to do the triple. I would imagine the answer to that is no, Bob, but I have not looked at it.
Yeah, it's possible that, you know, some Big Ten team won the NIT and NCAA, some big conference won the NIT and the NCAA in the same year. That probably happened, but the third tournaments haven't been around that long. The CBI and the CIT was around for a few years.
So
I don't think that's happened.
The PDQ, I believe. Let me ask you this: could you have anticipated this about this conference and those teams specifically in any way?
Well, Charlotte was. Well, that tournament was a bunch of crap teams, but Charlotte was a little bit of a surprise, probably. But I mean, North Texas and UAB. I mean, they both have around 30 wins, and it's not. You know, those are teams that are used to winning, and against that type of competition, they've proven they can beat those types of teams. So not a complete surprise in the NIT, but. Good for Conference USA. They're a little top-heavy, that conference. They have some really bad teams.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, well, let's start with the first of the two games yesterday. Tomorrow. First of the two Final Four games, 6:09 Eastern, 3:09 Pacific for tip-off. Let's be specific. FAU, the Owls of Florida Atlantic from Conference USA against San Diego State. The Aztecs, 2.5-point favorites installed. We never use that word anymore, Kelly. Installed as 2.5-point favorites with a total of 131.5. How do you see this?
Yeah, well, first of all, San Diego State is lucky to even be here. I mean, you hold Alabama to 3 of 27 three-point shooting and win by 7. Had they been 6 of 27 or 7 of 27, which is terrible, then Alabama would have won that game. Even more lucky against Creighton. They beat Creighton by 1 point. Creighton is a good three-point shooting team. I get that San Diego State is a good three-point defense, but Creighton still would be expected to shoot 30, 31, 32% from three, and they shot 2 of 17. Had they shot 3 of 17, it'd be Creighton here. I mean, San Diego State is ridiculously lucky to be here. And what are they giving up for the tournament? 17% from three-point range or something ridiculous. It's completely lucky that San Diego State has gotten this far. Because three-point defense, as you know, is the most variable thing in basketball, three-point offense and defense. So completely lucky. Whereas Florida Atlantic, and people say, well, Florida Atlantic shoots a lot of threes, and San Diego State has that good three-point defense. But Florida Atlantic's won 4 games in the tournament shooting 31% from three. It's not like they've done it because they've, you know, been draining three-pointers. They were outshot from three-point range 34% to 36% in upset wins over Tennessee and Kansas State the last 2 rounds. They haven't needed to make threes to beat good teams. So this is a really interesting team, and they're more than just a team that shoots a lot of threes. They're doing it in different ways in the tournament against different styles of defenses, which is really impressive. I mean, the coaching staff, the players deserve a lot of credit. They have earned their way here. It's a really interesting match. But I think FAU is going to try to get ahead of the defense by trying to run more and score baskets in transition. You don't want to get up against San Diego State's half-court defense. I think they know that. But I think they're going to try to run it a little bit more. They can score inside the arc. If they do get in the half-court defense, that's where they can do some damage. Florida Atlantic made 54% of the two-point shots, the 38th in the nation in two-point shooting. San Diego State, as great as their three-point defense is, they're 149th in the nation in two-point defense. So they can score inside against San Diego State if they don't, you know, force jacking up threes. I think they can score inside despite the rim protectors that the Aztecs have. So I think it's an interesting matchup. I'm not really interested in the side. I do think the pace is going to be higher because I think Florida Atlantic is going to push the pace. So I lean with the over. I didn't make anything a bet here. My ratings using this season games only would only favor San Diego State by 1, but in the NCAA tournament, the prior, how good teams were expected to be before the season started based on talent, et cetera, adds a lot to San Diego State's prediction for this game. And I think 2.5 points is probably the right number for the side when you factor in the prior. But I still think there's a little bit of value on the over. I think San Diego's defense is not nearly as good as it's been. They've been more lucky than good on three-point defense. So I think there's some value on the over, just enough for a lean. I didn't bet the game. So.
Okay, 131.
If I hadn't bet it, I'd lean over.
131.5 is what we're showing kids says right now. FAU against the Fighting Stormy Bonnetonis of San Diego State. Kelly, very excited for FAU and Ken LaVica. All right, game two then, Bob, of course, would be UConn and Miami. Miami, quite the long shot as well to get here, and yet they are here under Jim Larrañaga. UConn, though, 5.5-point favorites. The total's 149, and UConn certainly has established themselves as the most dominant team of this tournament thus far.
Yeah, I'll get to that in a minute. You know, the thing about Miami, going into the tournament, so when I do my tournament ratings, I focus on games against good teams. Miami played enough good teams. I was like, all right, I'm get rid of all these games against these crappy teams early in the season. They don't matter. The thing about Miami is I do this thing where I have, you know, every opponent has a rating. Every game has a scheduled difficulty rating. It's the rating of the opponent, the site, et cetera, travel, et cetera. And the better the team, the opponent is, or the opponent and site is, the better Miami tends to play. So I have an equation that equates a team's game rating, and a game rating is how much they won or lost the game and how tough the opponent and site was. And the game rating, the equation for Miami's game rating as a function of the difficulty of the opponent and site, the slope of that equation is positive 0.57 for Miami. It should be zero. If a team is relatively the same against all levels of teams, and most teams are around zero, then that would be the case. But 0.57 means that for every 10 points better an opponent is, Miami is only 4 points worse.
Wow.
Relatively. So it's incredible. So relatively, they play 5.7 points better against a team that's 10 points better than average, and vice versa. If they play a crappy team, they're relatively worse. In fact, showed up in their spread this season. They're 0-7 this season, favored by 13 or more. But from -5 to underdog, so good teams, they're 17-4 against the spread, including 6-0 as a dog at 3 or more. This is the highest slope I've ever seen at this point in the season. And going into the tournament, before the tournament even started, it was super high. I was like, wow, Miami is a team that really beats good teams. I'm thinking if you watch them play, they have NBA players on offense who can make shots.
Bob, what's the bottom line? Because we got to run. What are you playing here?
Yeah, the bottom line is that Connecticut is a great defensive team, but Miami has played three top 15 defensive teams, Houston, Rutgers, and Texas, and they made 53.1% of their shots in those two games. So the defense does not matter. I think it's a lean with Miami. I have Connecticut by 4.
Okay, lean to Miami. Thank you, Bob. Jim Root from Three Man Weave on College Hoops next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Get everything you need to bet on baseball this season with 24/7 streaming, daily best bet emails, including advice, data, and strategy for only $19. It's American. Our experts are also getting ready for golf's first major of the year at Augusta. This year's upcoming Masters betting guide will break down every golfer in the field, plus futures bets and matchups. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today for only $19 at VSiN.com/subscribe. You pumped for the Masters, Kelly?
Hell yeah, I am.
How'd your Valero Texas Open bet start?
Oh yeah, really good. I've got lurkers right at the top and the bottom of the leaderboard, nowhere in between. Like nobody in between.
Kelly Bidlin going for his 59th second place finish.
Yeah, totally.
Didn't you have Kuchar? I saw he was up on the leaderboard.
Yes, I have Kuchar. Yeah, he's right up top.
Thought about you.
I believe he's leading right now, actually.
Okay. Masters next week, special long shots, Masters edition. We'll also have a Beating the Book Masters podcast as well next week for golf's first and grandest major of them all. I don't know about grandest, but certainly the biggest betting handle of all the majors with the Masters. Let's talk to the guy who's the – would you agree with me, Kelly, when I say he's – when it comes to the prima donna rankings of the three guys and three-man weave, he's third on the list? Not as big a prima donna as Kai or Man is. By the way, can we show this? The Ballad of Kelly Bidlin, Betting Torment. If you ain't first, you're second. For the fifth time. It's been more than 5 times.
No, that's just this season.
Oh,
I had 13 last season.
I love that you're sponsored by Wonder Bread.
Yeah, it's just a Ricky Bobby ripoff.
That's
from Talladega Nights.
Kelly Bidlin, as proud as ever. Jim Root, ladies and gentlemen, not a prima donna is all, always willing to come on the show. How you doing, Jimmy?
I'm good. I was worried you're going to say I was the prima donna of the group. I'm glad you let me off the hook there as the third prima donna. I'll take that.
No, Matty comes. Listen, Matt just had, you know, he called North Texas to win the NIT. He comes out here and just, you know, he's always trying to break away from you two guys. Like, that's his shtick. And then Kai comes on here and he just shames us with his hair. So
that's what it is. Yeah. See, Matt's maybe, he's very confident. He's very confident. Yeah. And Kai's got the hair. You're just, you're throwing Kai under the bus just because of the hair, man. He's got great hair.
Not you though, Jim. Let me start. Before we get to the final four games, let me just start with, you have this unbelievable portfolio of futures. How, like, what are your numbers that currently exist, and what have you had here that have led up to this point as well that just went by the wayside?
I was heartbroken to lose Alabama 50-1 and Houston 22-1. Those were tough. But I got to the Final Four with Miami 60-1 and San Diego State 120-1. So those were good numbers. Problem is, and this is, you know, stepping on the feet of my handicaps a little bit here, but I don't think either of those teams are going to win in the semifinals.
Yeah.
So I had to buy all the way over onto UConn and onto FAU to make those my most profitable outcomes, because I don't trust the Aztecs. I don't trust the Hurricanes in these two matchups here.
When did you make most of those? Pardon me. When did you make most of those futures bets?
Most of them were last April, like right after the tournament. I get in and I kind of make a lot of speculative bets, and you end up with some good ones. You end up with some bad ones. Like, for instance, I had a Louisville to win the title ticket. I think they won four games this year. That's not pretty, but you know, you get enough good ones that by the end you have a decent payout scenario and you kind of juggle it around. Like the San Diego State 120-1, that makes figuring out hedging a lot easier, because that gives me a lot of leeway. So at least having that set up well here. I think the Miami one was one I added in like February to try to just get a good price. And I got lucky. The teams I had no investment in were Arizona, Purdue, Kansas, Duke, like all these teams that lost the first weekend. So it set up pretty well going into Sweet 16 and Elite Eight.
Yeah. Don't feel bad about Louisville. I had Tagovailoa to win the Heisman. And I mean Talia Tagovailoa to win the Heisman. Wait, so if it's April, if most of those were April of last year, it occurs to me that April is, wait, quick check, tomorrow. So I have to pick your brain here, because that's great that you had these, but if you could sort of share with the audience, is there a team or two that you're sort of thinking about searching for numbers? Obviously, you know, you'll bet them based on what the number is, but are there teams that you have in mind where you're like, well, I can't wait to sort of see what the highest number I can get on club X and Y? Who might those teams be?
Biggest one's probably Duke. They just got Mark Mitchell back yesterday, one of their freshmen. Tyreek Proctor is also returning, and they bring in an awesome recruiting class. And it seemed like towards the end of the year, John Shire really got a hold of things as the head guy there. I think Duke's going to be probably preseason number one, so I'll try to get some money on them. And then Creighton is actually a team I really like. I don't know exactly who all is going to come back from this roster, but I think we'll get at least four of their five starters back, and they just need a little more depth. And I think they'll go into the portal. They'll find a couple extra guys. And we saw how good they could be at their peak. They almost got to the Final Four and really were, you know, one call away from doing so. I think they'll be just as good, if not better, next season. So those are two that I'm definitely looking at. Michigan State's another one I think worth taking investment on. Then there's a few more further down the line. I like to just bet on coaches at a price that I think is decent. So like Rick Pitino at St. John's, I have no idea who's going to be on the roster, but I'll probably take some if there's 100-1 or better or something, just because, look, it's Rick Pitino. I'll feel good about having that number.
I wonder if in the one shining moment montage, because it was really one of the underrated moments of this tournament, thinking about Duke now, where like they literally got beaten up by Tennessee. Like, and I wonder, I could just in the one shining moment, like Filipowski's just damaged face as part of that montage. Did that game sort of leave you a little empty about Duke? Like, wow, they really didn't get a fair shake in that game. They were just beaten up from the beginning.
Yeah, I think it ended up helping FAU because of how much of a big deal was made of the officiating of Tennessee in that game. I think Tennessee got called for three fouls in the second half, which is like ludicrous with the way they play. And Duke isn't necessarily like a sit on the perimeter and launch threes team. Like, they try to get to the rim a little bit. And for Tennessee to only have three fouls certainly set up well for, you know, Dusty May did his like, oh, we got to watch rugby to prepare for Tennessee, that kind of thing. I think it helped them out just because of how stark the difference was in what was called in that game.
Yeah. Uros Plavsic. Kelly with the elbows. throughout that game. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like 34
been
years old.
Tracking his career for a long time.
Oh, 24. I lied. Okay. So then you've already tipped your hand about these two games on Saturday, but let's just get a little further breakdown. You are not confident in either of your two futures that remain alive. You do like both the Owls of Florida Atlantic as a slight dog, and you like UConn. Are you laying the points there?
I think I'm going to lay the points with UConn. I would have loved to get five. I don't think it's ever really quite dipped to that, not for an extended period of time, at least. I'm also going to probably bet the over there. I think we're going to see a ton of points. I'm very confident that UConn can score against Miami's defense. There's just a lot of different ways to it. They're going to play through Sanogo a lot in the post. And I think Miami knows that if Omir gets in foul trouble, they're kind of done. So they're going to double a little bit, not let him go 1v1. That opens up dump offs to the dunker spot or kickouts to 3-point shooters for UConn. Like, there's a lot of points there. And then Miami loves to run. Even if you don't get a super high scoring first half, I think we'll see a ton of points in the second half with the way Miami kind of turns it on defensively. So I'm probably gonna bet the over 149 and then 5.5. I'll probably lay it just because, look, I was up close and personal in Vegas, watched UConn just smack Arkansas and smack Gonzaga. They're 15-0 against the spread against non-conference opponents this year, like dating all the way back to November, December. And there's no Big East team here. So I think UConn's going to be back to that peak demolition version that we've seen. And I'll probably end up laying it with them.
And you are betting Florida Atlantic.
Sure am. Why not keep rolling with it? They've been like these, you know, slight underdogs. The only game they were favored in was FDU. And I think you saw that, like, just kind of a different spot for them to be favored. They weren't really comfortable with it. But they've won outright and covered against Tennessee, against Kansas State. Just really comfortable with the way this team is able to play different styles. I think Bob was saying it in the last segment too. Like, they've won games that were 58 possessions. They've won games that were 75 possessions this year. Like, they're very comfortable with any of that. So playing San Diego State, who's very synonymous with Tennessee, I think, easy comparison to make. Physical, grind you into the half court. FAU held up really well against them. It's now getting 2.5. I'm very comfortable with that. I thought this would go the other way. I think a rather large betting group was on San Diego State as of yesterday, which moved the line a little bit. I'm fine with that. I'll take a little extra value on the Owls. I think they're going to get it done.
I'm with you too. It's just that people still don't buy it. They really just feels like people still don't buy it, but I do with FAU. We'll see.
They're legit, man.
This should be fun. What a fascinating Final Four. Certainly the exact opposite of the Blue Blood Final Four from last year and what we're used to generally with Final Fours. Because usually we get upsets, but then by the time you get here, it sort of has, you know, stabilized with who you might think would be the conventional wisdom teams that would get here, but not this year. Jim, enjoy. Thanks as always, man.
Appreciate it. Yeah, down in Houston. So any boots on the ground reporting you need, you let us know. The Weave is going to be down here. And
the Weave is going to be there.
We'll let you know the inside insights.
Are you the inside insights? Are you going to the games? Yes?
Yep. We'll be in the building for Saturday and Monday.
No wonder they're becoming such prima donnas besides Jim, huh? Thank you, Jim. I appreciate it. Thank you, Jim. At 3MW_CBB. And second chance points for Jim specifically, the number 2 on there as well. Should be fun. Tennis pick on the other side, Kelly. We have a tennis pick. After 2 days without having a tennis pick, we have one today. On the ladies' side in Miami, second part of the Sunshine Double. We'll let you know what that pick is. It has moved a bit, but it is still playable. We'll do that. Paul Carr will join us as well. He's got Premier League picks. If baseball, basketball, tennis, golf isn't enough for you, how about some soccer? It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
There's no better time to hit the court for some exciting action in college basketball. Sign up with BetMGM using bonus code VSiN1000. Place your first bet on March matchups. If your wager loses, you'll still receive up to $1,000 back in bonus bets. Find out why March, there's one day left, is the most magical month in sports and take your shot at thrilling tournament wins. Eligibility restrictions apply. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. U.S. promotional offers not available in Mississippi, Nevada, New York, and Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in Colorado, Washington, D.C., Illinois, Indiana, Louisiana, Maryland, Mississippi, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming. Call 877-8 877-8-HOPE-NEW-YORK or text H-O-P-E-N-Y. That's 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona, 1-800-522-4700 in Kansas and Nevada, 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa, 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. How about that,
Kelly? That's it. He did it.
That's it.
Show's over.
See you later.
Walk off.
We get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate the feedback from everybody who's who are listening intently, filling in the blanks for us. We appreciate it. Jonathan Silvera, ask Paul if he felt like he had to drink his beer faster with a shorter game. I'll be sure to ask Paul Carr, who's standing by the Royals game. This is from GV at New Jersey, New York. He said, regarding baseball totals, yeah, I went into yesterday with the live over total strategy as well. Once the bullpen arms came in, it went well. Also, regarding the pitch clock, did anyone see the DeGrom pitch-com fiasco? Pitch count fiasco. When the umps totally called a pitch clock violation and then reversed it. Just odd. You know what? I was at the sports book and there was no audio, so I couldn't figure out exactly what was happening. But that's interesting that that's what it was, because there was a whole delay in a game, like on a 2-2 count. And I was like, what's the debate here? So that was it. Edward Lefevre tells us that there's not many games today in baseball because today was set up as a rain day in case of postponements. Really?
Oh,
really? Only 10?
We got to build that in for day two.
Yeah, yep. Only 5 games scheduled for rain day allotments. Mike Alvarez, after a long night of crunching the numbers, Gil, it has been revealed that your beloved San Francisco Giants are on pace to go 0-162, and my beloved Dodgers are on pace to go 162-0. Let me just say this about the Giants lineup, their batting order. Oh, my God, is it bad. Only to be eclipsed by teams like the Nats and the A's who actually won. Like, you look at some of these lineups. Like, if you look at the Giants play the Yankees, the Giants lineup versus the Yankees lineup, and it's
all-star team.
It's ridiculous. Yes.
I can name, like, 2 guys on the Giants.
Giants with 4 hits yesterday. Mike Rouse filling in the blanks for us. Thanks for doing the research for us. He says, going back last 20 years, talking about what Dr. Bob was asking, in 2006, Florida won the NCAA and South Carolina won the NIT. And in 2003, Syracuse won the NCAA with Carmelo. St. John's won the NIT, but had to vacate the title. Talking about same conference to win multiple postseason tournaments in college hoops. But these are the 3 we're talking about with Conference USA, CBI, Charlotte, NIT, North Texas, and now perhaps the unimaginable, FAU winning March Madness. Just Doug, thanks. You've got to give the doctor more nerd time. That was fascinating. It really was. Dr. Bob was going off, and then we had to go to a commercial. Sam Ginsberg, definitely loved listening to Bob Stoll, but had to laugh when the bottom line became a bottom paragraph. And Will Hill texts in, Bob's still talking about Connecticut shooting to his cat right now as we're doing these subsequent segments. By the way, a couple other things. We bring in Paul Carr from Topeka, Kansas. Paul Carr, who attended the Royals game yesterday, and I will ask you if you had to chug your beer quicker. But a couple other things in that Angels game. Shohei using PitchCom in his jersey to call pitches as well, which is a fascinating thing because he has so many pitches. It's just more efficient with the pitch clock to do that. I think he's experimented with last year as well. And then the other thing is, did you see Hunter Renfro's catch in right field? That might be that's one of the more amazing catches you'll ever see. I wonder if that catch will even be eclipsed this year. At least in terms of the weirdness of it, like left hand behind him, just took a stab at it. It was amazing. Opening batter of the 5th inning. Paul, what was your experience like yesterday?
It was crisp. I mean, it's opening day. It's always great. So that part was good, except for, you know, the Royals not scoring and only getting 2 hits. But as far as the clock goes, I mean, the game was 2:32.
Oh.
And it just kept moving. Like the weirdest thing, purely just as a fan, is I kept missing probably once an inning. I would miss the first pitch of a plate appearance. So it wasn't the time, shortened time between pitches of one plate appearance, as much as I think it's 20 seconds between, which was throwing me off. So I'm whatever, writing in my scorebook or talking to my dad or whatever. And I look up and it's, you know, 1-0 already.
I'm not, because that was
the trickiest thing mentally to adjust with.
Yeah. Cause that was the experience watching multiple games at the same time too, where it was like, as I said earlier, if a batter decided to swing and put the ball in play as it happened, the first or second pitch, you would look up, you'd be like, wait, yeah, how are there 2 outs? I just looked away. Was awesome
yep.
in that regard.
Yeah, it was good. It was good though. You know, I mean, it was 2.5 hours.
Yeah, man.
Nice and easy. It didn't feel rushed other than just adjusting to the timing. It just kind of felt like this is how baseball ought to be.
Right.
I could see it being a little different, you know, postseason or dramatic games down at the end where, you know, guys want to take a little more time or you want to build that tension a little bit. But for now, I mean, yeah, no complaints on my end.
But it was like, you know, Jeff Francoeur was on with us earlier this week, and he said it best. Like, when Shohei was facing Mike Trout in the World Baseball Classic, we don't care if that goes on for 10 minutes. Like, dramatic moments at the end, we're cool with that. I mean, that's great baseball, right? That's the tension of baseball. You almost like to milk the moment. But, yeah, we don't need to see four-hour games between, you know, the Mariners and the Tigers in the middle of June. Right. We just don't. So, yep. I mean, it was awesome in every which way. Let's talk Premier League.
Yep.
And let's specifically talk about this notion of they just came off the Champions League, right? And so now they're jumping back in, and you tread lightly in this sort of circumstance?
Yeah, Champions League and international break. So yeah, a lot of these guys were playing for their country, whether it was in Europe or North America or South America. Yeah, I'm always a little careful here just because there's injuries. There's, hey, this guy just flew back from Argentina. He's healthy, but we're not going to play him. Types of questions. So I'm even more cautious than usual about waiting for a good lineup, especially like the Arsenal game I have this week. I haven't actually played this yet, but I'm planning to, but I want to make sure they're playing enough of an attacking lineup to make this bet worthwhile.
And so Man City, Liverpool, which is the game of the week, you're not touching that, for instance?
Yeah. I don't know if it's tied to the international break as much as Liverpool has just been the biggest variance team this season. Like almost no result would surprise me. They could get smoked. They could hang 3 goals on City. I kind of like the draw. Anytime you get north of plus 300 on a draw, I'm usually pretty intrigued. So I kind of like that, but I'm probably going to end up staying away from this one.
All right. The home stretch of the, I guess we can call it the home stretch of the Premier League season, 38 total games. We're about, you know, depending on the team, depending on the side, 10, 11, 12 games shy of that, with Arsenal with an increasing lead, 8 points over Man City at the top of the table. You have 3 picks. Let us begin, sir. They're all tomorrow. What do you got?
All right. We're going to start with not the most exciting game of the day, but I'm taking Nottingham Forest to win at home against Wolverhampton at plus 195. Forest has been a different team at home this season. They played almost everybody tough, including some much better opponents. Wolverhampton is not a much better opponent. Their offense is dreadful. They haven't had more than 11 shots in a road game since the World Cup. And Forest plays well at home. They love to get a goal and just kind of grind out a win. So this feels a lot like a 1-0 type of win for either team, really. But I like the price getting on Forest. You know, I think they win this 1 out of 3 times. So plus 195 on a Forest home win.
Yeah, two sides trying to avoid relegation, I guess. Are you worried about your Southampton bet from before the season?
A little bit, only because not because Southampton's been good as much as other teams are just being worse.
Yeah.
But, I mean, obviously the price is still great at plus 300. So it's still one of the 2 or 3 favorites, I think, right now.
I have them 3-1 from before the season. Paul gave that out at Southampton to get relegated. So Nottingham Forest plus 195 against Wolverhampton. What's next?
Bournemouth Fulham over 2.5 goals, plus 105. Fulham doesn't have Mitrovic, our favorite Serbian henchman. He's suspended after a red card a couple weeks ago. But they don't have Willian either, but they have lots of young attackers, and Fulham likes to possess the ball and attack. Bournemouth likes to counter, so I think it'll play into the hands of both teams. I think we'll get goals one way or the other. Fulham is safe. Bournemouth is fighting relegation, so they've got some desperation. I just think there's going to be goals. Fulham's defense isn't good. Bournemouth's defense isn't good. Two of the 3 worst defensive teams this year. So over 2.5 plus 105.
All right, you are involved in the Arsenal game.
Yeah, like I said, I haven't officially played this because I want to make sure Arsenal has a good lineup out here, but I think they're going to score goals against Leeds. Over 2.5 plus 120 is my plan. Leeds does not have Tyler Adams, American midfielder who covers a ton of ground. He's out with injury, maybe for the rest of the season. They're missing a couple other guys at the back too. And when they haven't had Adams this season, they give up 3 goals to Fulham, 3 goals to Man City, even 2 goals to Wolves, which, like I said, does not attack well. So I think Arsenal will get plenty of goals. They're at home. They've scored 3 goals in, I forget the number off the top of my head, but I want to say like 8 of the last 10 home games, something along those lines. So I think they're going to get goals. Do want to make sure the lineup looks good before playing that, though.
Okay. Nottingham Forest over Wolverhampton, the over in the Bournemouth-Fulham game, and then with the caveat of checking a lineup first, Arsenal and Leeds, the over in that if the lineup fits. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it, man.
You bet.
Paul Carr, have a good one. Expected Value Podcast, True Media Networks, Expected Value Podcast, where all podcasts are distributed. I'll give that tennis pick next, I promise. And JBT on the NBA next.